Hi, I'm Dana Perkins, and you're listening to Switched On, the BNEF podcast. So today I'm joined by Boken. She is a carbon analyst for BNEF, and she's joined by Michael Kenefek, who's part of our decentralized energy team. And they're here to talk to me about a recent piece of work they did titled European Utility Company Profiles 2020. They're going to talk to us about different parts of the value chain, generation, networks, and retail, and where some of these strategies are different, and which ones are actually proving successful. As the energy transition continues full steam ahead, what can we learn from the decisions these European utilities have made? Now, if you want to read this report, it can be found on the Bloomberg Terminal at BNEF Go or at BNEF.com. As a quick reminder, BNEF does not provide investment or strategy advice, and you can hear a more complete disclaimer at the very end of the show. But now, let's speak with Bo and Michael. Bo, Michael, thank you very much for joining today.
Thank you, Dana.
Thanks for having us.
So today we're going to talk about utilities, specifically European utilities. And this is a really exciting space at the moment because there are a lot of things that I would say it's safe to say we're looking at maybe that are changing going forward. But before we dive right into what BNEF is so good at, which is talking about the future, let's talk a little bit and lay the groundwork for those out there in, you know, podcast land wondering what specifically we're talking about when we mean utilities. And would you guys kind of break down which part of the utility value chain we are looking at when we're looking at the company profiles?
We usually look at the utility value chain by separating the upstream, midstream, and downstream. And what do we mean by upstream is mainly fossil fuels, thermal generation, renewable generation, everything that makes power at the end. And midstream, we look at transmission and distribution, basically all the grids and networks that runs our power. And in the downstream, we'll focus on retail and energy services and also non-energy services, such as like telecom, real estate, management, insurance, and finance.
Now, all of us are here in London, still in lockdown. So we see a path forward. Depending on when you're listening to this, we may or may not yet be permitted to have coffee with somebody outdoors in a park. So my question is, what has changed for the European utility space over the past year with COVID-19?
COVID-19 has really impacted different parts of utility value chain in a different way. We have those fuel suppliers and generators with exposure to lower power demand and lower power prices and fuel prices. They have been hardest hit. While those units with more regulated returns and residential power retail, they have been more protected.
Yeah, I'll talk more on the downstream side of things, in particular about energy services, which we'll make sure is what we mean by energy services is like installing rooftop PV or storage or electric vehicle chargers or energy efficiency for residential and commercial users. And we kind of saw an acceleration of a trend we've been seeing that these businesses, have, a lot of utilities have invested in this space, but it kind of been a bit slow to find growth. And I think COVID-19 meant that utilities couldn't get in and install the stuff. They couldn't get to clients to sell that. And we've seen several utilities perhaps step back from this space. Centrica and NG being two that come to mind.
Especially COVID-19 has exposed kind of the weaknesses of the coal industry. So we've seen basically all this reduced power demand and reduced kind of power prices hitting those thermal generators, those coal industry. And meanwhile, renewables have been basically quite protected because they have the grid priority and they have been able to secure good prices through like predetermined price agreements, such as PPAs, power purchase agreements.
So do we think though that these changes are here to last? Because, you know, this industry doesn't change on a dime in terms of the infrastructure that you build and these PPAs that you're signing into the future. So does this mean that these will be lasting impacts when demand does what we think will actually return pretty, you know, aggressively as soon as things start to open up again?
In general, the thermal producers haven't been doing well. It's not just because of COVID-19 and the reduced power demand, but also because of the carbon price. In Europe, we actually just hit a record high carbon price a few days ago, hitting over 40 euros per metric ton. And this adds quite a lot of price pressure, cost pressure for these. So basically, the carbon price hit over 40 euros per metric metric ton this month. And it's quite a big hike compared to 2017 when it was just over €5 per ton. And it takes a ginormous bite into those carbon intensive coal and lignite generators margin. And we will continue to see that coal being squeezed out the grid by renewables and cheap gas.
So this is geographically very split, though, because there are some countries that are way more exposed to lignite than others. So which countries are changing the most?
Definitely Germany has been one of those that are being hit the most. Also, increasingly, we're seeing that this is hitting also those Eastern European countries, such as Poland. We will most likely to see like a coal phase out that is even faster than what has been said in the news at the moment.
Which then brings me to which companies. So, you know, this will probably disproportionately advantage or disadvantage certain companies. So which companies have done the best?
We have been following this as well, like which companies have been performing better. And based on like the 3-year return on invested capital, we're seeing that those who have been exposed mostly to the thermal generation, like Uniper and RWE, they have been performing less well as those who have more renewable exposure, such as like Enel and Iberdrola and Vattenfall, for example. Ultimately, the high performers have been those with regulated return, whether it's from like grid operations or from renewables. However, there is a caveat about regulated returns. It's that it exposes these companies to policy risk. For example, for European grids, the allowed returns have been falling.
There is falling returns for European networks. An example of that is Ofgem, the UK energy regulators, halved the return on equity that transmission network operators can achieve. And we're seeing so similar trends across Europe and Spain, Germany, in Scandinavia as well. And I guess in response to that, we're seeing, I guess, the European utilities expand outside of Europe. I guess Latin America has been one of the main targets there. Enel wants to expand its grids business there. ENGIE bought TAG, a Brazilian networks company, and Iberdrola as well. Is also expanding its business in Brazil and the US. And it's really where it sees its growth in networks and not in its European businesses.
So really, when we're talking about European utilities, in many respects, we're talking about global utilities. Would you say that that is the strategy of the majority of the utilities in Europe, is to be looking for expansion areas, either in South America, you know, typically very much linked to those in Iberia, right? The utilities that operate there. Or is that just, you know, the select few?
There is definitely a strong interest in South America. For example, both Enel and Iberdrola are strongly there. They are attracted by the demand, strong demand that is there. Also attracted by some of the supportive policy regimes that are in place. And also by that there is still potential to grow quite strongly the renewable generation in those markets at the moment.
Good point. There is expansion in Latin America. However, some companies are not expanding, and if anything, they are actually reducing their geographic coverage. And I think Centrica is probably one of the biggest stories we saw there. Centrica had a energy business in North America, Direct Energy, which they sold to NRG Energy late in 2020. And I guess the goal of Centrica now is to really consolidate its business and reduce its focus down to just its home markets of the UK and Ireland. And Centrica weren't the only company doing this either. ENGIE, they have announced quite a big strategy change, and part of that is to reduce the number of countries that they operate in.
Okay, so then we are really, truly talking about Europe here. So since we are talking about Europe and we're looking at certain countries maybe decarbonizing faster than others, depending upon how their grids are currently set up, I wanted to know, is there still a strong case for integration?
We have seen kind of some signs of vertical integrate being not as advantageous structure anymore. We saw E.ON and RWE swapping their assets. RWE focuses now in upstream while E.ON is specialized in downstream. We also saw OVO buying SSE's retail arm, which kind of raises the question whether the generation retail era is coming to an end. After this deal, the majority of UK customers are now served by retailers with no generation, which was not the case 20 years ago, where the almost 90% was served by generator retailers. And there are really kind of two groups of reasons. The pull reason from this integrated structure is that the skills to run a successful business is not that much. There's like little overlap between generation arm and retail arm. And then the ultimately the main argument why or many companies have chosen the integrated structure is the physical hedge, which means that you have one buying power and one selling power, and then you can match the volumes with each other. But it's becoming less important because of kind of the ongoing evolution of financial hedging tools that it's providing these generators options that are more flexible than coupling their generation with retail. They basically have now so many different financial instruments like PPAs, forwards, and futures, which can all do what the retail coupling did and maybe better. And also the fuel switching and increasing renewables are really making this hedging more difficult than before. And there's also the push element here that customers are wanting more today, and utilities are exploring quite a lot, like how can they do this? How can they satisfy their customers? But there haven't been really a winning strategy. So by consolidating and having a larger customer base, this could help them to scale up faster.
Now for a very short break. Stay with us. For right now, let's say, okay, we've talked about retail. Let's throw the metaphorical car in reverse and let's head back up the value chain to networks. And let's talk about networks. What do you see and what should we watch for 2021 when it comes to networks?
So as you said, grid companies looking to grow abroad in Latin America, we said. The other big trend you see in networks is the adoption of digital technologies. So getting more smart meters in the grid.
So that's where the smart meters live.
Exactly. So that's probably like a great use for smart meters for network operators to see what's going on in their grids and being able to respond to that more quickly and just gathering that data, integrating that with other data streams from substations they have on the grid and using all that to understand where, you know, predictive maintenance on their grid, you know, reducing those operating costs while at the same time perhaps employing digital or software solutions such as local flexibility markets, which we were covering in other research, which would allow these network companies to reduce the capital they're investing, so the amount of grids that they're building as well. So while the returns are falling, I think the target now for within Europe for utilities is to try and get their costs down as much as they can.
And which companies or utilities are doing this the best right now?
So NL, it's the...
NL, okay.
It's a very short answer, but NL are investing very heavily in the digital space.
Yeah, and it's not only the quality of the grids, but also the quantity because of the uptake of the huge amount of renewable capacity. We will also need a lot more networks to connect them. So we're expecting that just more grids will come online. And these big utilities, Iberdrola and Enel, they have already made big commitment to expand their grids. Iberdrola said that they will invest almost 30 billion euros to kind of increase it almost to 150% by 2025, which is quite a big uptake from their existing base.
And throwing the car in reverse yet one more time. So let's go back to generation. So you mentioned that renewables were an indicator, actually, well, not an indicator, but that we did see some correlation between success recently and the amount of existing renewables that people actually had as a part of their portfolio. And the question is, what are the opportunities and what are the things to watch in the generation side? We talked a little bit earlier about how renewables for some of these companies, the ones that actually had a lot of exposure there, did pretty well recently. And do you see that as continuing to be a trend?
Yes, definitely. The business case for renewables are definitely there. The cost of the technology is falling and climate policy is supporting it. And also it's important to think what are the future gaps, and industrial decarbonization will be a big thing to watch. Electrification will definitely boost renewables, so there will be a business case there, and there will be also a business case to kind of in those newer technologies to decarbonize those hard to abate sectors like steel, aluminum, and cement. A lot of utilities have already jumped into like development of hydrogen, CCS, and it will be interesting to see like what kind of business strategy will actually be the winning one in those areas. And another thing will be interesting to watch is the flexibility, which will be a key challenge as we have more uptake of renewables. So the question will be, how do we kind of address all these challenges? Companies will definitely want to be involved in this, and there will be also a market design challenge for kind of making all this piece come together.
And then how about even further back to the fossil fuel part of things? Because really, let's go as far upstream as possible. Now, we're already talking about how renewables are going to help with decarbonization, but presumably there is still just quite a bit within the fossil fuel space that has yet to transition to something else, or may never transition to something else. How do you see that changing, I guess, or maybe not in the next year?
The story for coal is quite straightforward now, as we're also expecting the carbon to go up as with renewable uptake. The coal story is that it will be phased out just by looking at the economics, not even taking into account like those coal phase out policies. But the bigger question is gas. What will happen to gas? Right now, there is still a business case for gas because of the volatility of renewables and the need for balancing the grid. And most utilities in Europe, they have already committed to net zero. But at the moment, gas is still profitable and it's a money maker for them. So how to phase out gas will be a bigger question for them to kind of get to their actual net zero commitment.
So what are some of the companies, again, from the business models? So who are the utilities that are doing the best in this space?
In upstream, we have seen that it's the renewable majors that have been done the best. So we have Enel, Iberdrola, and EDF, Vattenfall. They are all kind of doing similarly well when we look at like the return on invested capital.
And are there any outliers here across the utility space comprehensively? We're seeing certain trends in certain subsegments, but are there any outliers which just don't seem to be doing the things that the others are?
So one company, one energy major, ENGIE, five years ago, didn't take the same route as Enel or Iberdrola. It preferred to go down an energy services route. And since 2010, they've acquired about 19 companies in this energy services space. That's energy storage companies, energy efficiency, generation, and on-site generation. And last year, they decided against that strategy. They've replotted course. They are going to spin out the energy part of the energy services business and take the cash raised from that and invest that into developing renewables and building out their grids business as well. So there were companies who maybe took a different tact, and now we see them reverting course and going down the same route that Enel, Iberdrola, that they pursued so successfully.
In the upstream, maybe one company that comes to mind is Fortum. While kind of other companies, they've been more invested in how to decarbonize their generation portfolio. Fortum instead, their generation portfolio was quite low carbon, but instead of going more or expanding their low carbon, they went and bought Uniper, who had higher carbon intensity than they did. So that was an interesting development. But I guess what they are really betting on is that there will be a tighter power market. And while coal and nuclear plants retire and the gas production from Groningen ends, there will be a really tight power market where like gas plants that Uniper has a lot and hydro, they will have a huge advantage in that case.
So we've talked about a lot of successful business models and a lot of successful businesses on the show, keeping it really quite upbeat. But I want to know about how competitive this space is and what we see happening in the future. I mean, is it a crowded market?
That it is, definitely. We haven't seen quite a lot of new entrants in this market. especially from oil and gas sector, there is a huge gap between kind of now and reaching the Paris Agreement. So there is space as well, but it's definitely getting more competitive. An example of that is what we saw with the UK seabed auction, where we saw a record high level of bidding from oil and gas sector, from BP and InBev. Both of the oil and gas and utilities have their advantages. And it's good to notice that even though maybe oil and gas have a lot of money, but utilities, they have advantage in their experience of developing assets and building those renewable projects. And also their existing pipeline is invaluable. And those factors have been built over the years, and it may give them an edge over these oil majors coming into the power sector. But what also Shell mentioned earlier, that they have big trading desks and ability to manage big offshore projects. This could help them kind of to manage those merchant risks that we see in the power sector and manage those unsubsidized revenue risks.
And oil and gas majors, their focus isn't just on the upstream in renewable development. We're actually seeing a lot of activity from Shell in particular in the downstream space. So Shell has acquired energy retail businesses in Australia, in the UK. They've bought battery storage companies, Sonnen in Germany. They've bought 4 separate electric vehicle charging companies. Total has bought Saft, an array of EV charging companies itself. So oil and gas companies are targeting both the upstream, the generation side, as well as the downstream on the retail side. And Shell only recently announced that they want to double the amount of electricity that they sell to customers by 2030.
With that, that's what to watch when we sit down to do the next look at these utilities and their company profiles. This may be a very different conversation with a lot more energy companies involved in a bigger way going forward. And with that, Michael, Bo, thank you so much for your insights today, and great having you on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dana.
This episode of Switched On was edited by Rex Warner of Greystoke Media. Bloomberg NEF is a service provided by Bloomberg Finance LP and its affiliates. This recording does not constitute, nor should it be construed as, investment advice, investment recommendations, or a recommendation as to an investment or other strategy. Bloomberg NEF should not be considered as information sufficient upon which to base an investment decision. Neither Bloomberg Finance LP nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this recording, and any liability as a result of this recording is expressly disclaimed.